Wednesday, 5 p.m., time for American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. I was able to lasso my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, here as well, with you for the next hour, as always. And we're going to continue our count up through two 500 album long lists.
Everybody else does countdowns. We count up.
Right. From the past to the present. I'm doing this very deliberately because I think what we're trying to do is convey, as we're moving through the albums, how albums like influence one another and how things basically, I mean, you could just drop in anywhere along a timeline and just appreciate an album for what it is. But I always find it interesting to see how music develops and how things change, how artists basically progress. And so that's a major part of what is happening here. We started this whole thing back by focusing on albums from early 1964 and working our way up toward the present. As I said, playing through 2,000 albums. So far, we've played about 150 out of the 1,000 that we intend to play.
So far to go.
We do. Well, we've only gone from 1964 to 1971. But 1971's been a heck of a year. And where we're at now is November of 1971. We're going to be on this month for quite a bit as well, because every month in November has been pretty remarkable. But if you really want to put this in perspective, you know that we're working on two lists, perhaps, if you've tuned in before. We have a top 40 list and a non-top 40 list. The point of the non-top 40 list is to basically pay respect to albums that may not have been hugely popular in their time, but have gone on to prove themselves as being incredibly influential. And they help us to make the point that albums matter. Albums being played as albums are
valid.
I think more than valid. I think it's essential to really understand the history of music and artistry throughout the entire rock and roll era was based upon being able to put together an album, especially after we got past, say, the early 60s. So let's get on with it. If we have two lists, one is a top 40 list, the other one is a non-top 40 list, where do you think Pink Floyd would end up? I mean, they're only one of the most popular bands of all time. Almost everything that they've released that people are familiar with have been some of the best-selling albums of all time.
Right.
But in November of 1971,
not so much.
Try to imagine a time when Pink Floyd were not well-known enough to reach the top 40, or more accurately, when they were not capable of it. Sid Barrett made his exit after the band's first album back in the summer of 67, and that left the rest of the band in a bit of a lurch. Barrett may have been crazy, but he was a very interesting and popular songwriter. Without him, the rest of the band floundered about, making modestly interesting psychedelic music, but most of it lacked any mainstream appeal or even a sense of direction. There were songs, I mean, I'm not making this up. If you go to some of their earlier albums, their song titles are, for example, here's one. Several species of small furry animals gathered together in a cave and grooving with a Pict. Or Alan's Psychedelic Breakfast. I mean, they're promising until you dedicate a portion of your life listening to this nonsense. I mean, despite having really cool covers, most of the early period Pink Floyd albums meandered tediously until November 1971, when they released Metal. Suddenly, the songs have a sense of structure and, most shockingly, melody. For that reason, it's interesting to note that virtually the entire album is constructed as a group effort. So, in the middle of the psychedelic 60s, you could get away with the stuff that the band was doing, but the 70s demanded at least some sense of structure, and the band members rose to the challenge by creating an album based almost entirely on atmosphere. Metal as an album seems to float like a feather in the wind, and although it might not be an exciting album, it most definitely is intriguing. In a sense, this album was the dry run that prepared the band for their subsequent magnum opus, Dark Side of the Moon. So let's get to it right away. The opening track is called One of These Days. It's an instrumental driven by a bass riff, as you'll hear. And it's essentially an instrumental until they basically recorded the drummer saying in a very high voice, "One of these days, I'm going to cut you into little pieces." And then they slowed it down and made it sound really ominous. So here then are Pink Floyd with the opening track from Metal entitled One of These Days.
That was scary.
Beginning and ending with that foreboding wind sound. This is, it's almost the sound of like the band, not jamming, but I mean, working like a band. Pink Floyd are not a band that you normally would associate with being a bunch of team players. I mean, the rift between the primary members of the band have gone on for over 30 years. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I guess the fact that they kicked out their lead singer was foreboding for the rest of their history then.
Yeah, well, David Gilmour came in to take Sid's place, and he proved himself to be one of the most remarkable guitarists of his era. But he and Roger Waters didn't see eye to eye very well, and it just basically caused a rift that got bigger and bigger and bigger as time went by. But on this album, you hear them working together rather brilliantly. And as that song that we just heard, entitled, One of These Days, ends with that blowing wind, which works as sort of a segue to the next track, which is sort of the exact opposite. As much as that song was like a forceful rocker, this next song is really does sound like it's floating on that wind that the previous track ended with. It sounds like it could actually, to me, when I first heard it, I thought, man, this could be a Nick Drake song, which is a bit unusual for Pink Floyd. But that's one thing that makes metal such a wonderful album, is that it has a lot of diversity. So let's continue then on Americanet Radio, 90.3 WHPC, with Pink Floyd performing A Pillow of Winds.
deep beneath the ground. The early morning sounds and I go down. Sleepy time in my life, with my love by my side, and she's breathing low. And I rise like a bird in the haze, when the first rays touch the sky. And the night wind.
A Pillow of Winds from the album Metal, which we're playing in its entirety. It's a relatively long album with not very many tracks, but I've got to make sure that I try to keep my commentary concise from this point on to make sure I get what the whole thing
fit. So we're not going to have a whole dissertation on Eiderdown?
No, or nor will we speak for 15 minutes when we introduce a song that's 23 minutes long. But the next song, I think, is the centerpiece of side one of the album. It's entitled Fearless, and it's interesting because it starts and it ends with a crowd, a huge crowd, singing Rodgers and Hammerstein's You'll Never Walk Alone. It was a song that I guess goes back to World War II, but Jerry and the Pacemakers had recorded the song as a single, and it was a huge hit in England. Didn't cross over here, but the Liverpool Football Club embraced it as their theme song. So when the team would play, the crowds would gather in the stands and sing the song. So Pink Floyd set up microphones to record it, used that as like a side effect, and that became the theme, opening and closing of the song Fearless.
Is that their team?
The Fearless? No, I forget the name, but it's just, I don't even know. Actually, I mean,
is that Pink Floyd's favorite football team?
Oh, that I don't know either. I just think that because they're not from Liverpool, so I would think not. But probably Jerry and the Pacemakers' favorite football team. Okay, then from the album Metal, here's the track Fearless by Pink Floyd.
As I rise above the tree line and
I always found that to be a rather interesting piece of music, not just for the crowd chanting, of course, although that is a strange highlight, but David Gilmour's interesting laid-back guitar work on that always sort of fascinated me. There's two tracks left for side one. Side two consists entirely of one song, and that's how we'll end the show. But the next two tracks, I would say, are both sort of like toss-offs on the rest of the album. The next track, which is called Saint-Tropez, is the only solo track on the records. It was written entirely by Roger Waters. He brought it in and just basically asked the other band members to drop parts onto it. Nothing unusual about that at all. It was just basically him trying to put together him recounting a day on the south of France and, you know, the day-to-day activities. Not much happens. So I guess it's just a simple pleasantry.
Nice lazy day.
Right. And it's followed by a track called Seamus, spelt S-E-A-M-U-S. So I presume that's Seamus, like Sean, S-E-A-N.
Like the Irish name, Seamus.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, it's a sort of a country blues toss-off with lead vocal by a dog. actually, it's Steve Marriott's dog, coincidentally. They were recording, and the dog started to howl, so they decided to use it on the track. And the band thought it was funny. Not many other people really did. A lot of people now say this is probably the stupidest thing that Pink Floyd ever did. But it's pleasant enough and an odd way to end the album. So here, back to back then, from the album Metal, are Saint-Tropez followed by Seamus on American at Radio 90.3 WHPC.
As I reach for a peach, slide a ride down behind a sofa in Saint-Tropez. Breaking a stick with a brick on the sand, riding a wave in the wake of an old sedan. Sleeping alone in the drone of the darkness, scratched by the sand that fell from our love. Deep in my dreams and I still hear her calling. If you're alone, I'll come home. Backward and homebound, the pigeon, the dove. Gone with the wind and the rain on the airplane. Bone in the home with no silver spoon. Sooner than wait for a break in the weather, I'll gather my far-flung thoughts together, speeding away on the wind to a new day. If you're alone, I'll come home. shameless as the dog was outside. Well, I was in the kitchen, shameless, my hell was outside.
Well, at least it's short.
I thought it added a nice effect.
I guess it's a cute,
silly
way to end side one. But now we flip the record over to side two, which is just one very long track, which is an unusual thing to do. I mean, certainly not the first band to ever do it. The Allman Brothers had two tracks on Fillmore East that took up an entire side. I believe the band Love did it as well on one of their earlier studio albums. But this is a construction, something that was pieced together with a lot of effort to come up with a 23-minute long song. It's a summary of musical experiments that involved all four band members. It starts with this sort of submarine radar, sort of a ping sound. And that sets the mood for the entire piece. And it's rather simple. It really was the band using a piano. It's just the band's piano player hitting one note on the piano, but he's putting it through a Leslie cabinet. Now, a Leslie cabinet is a speaker that sits in this really big box, and the speaker itself
rotates,
which causes the sound to
Doppler effect,
like adding a Doppler effect to the sound. And that's how they eventually created the ping. From there, David Gilmour comes in with a slide guitar, which provides a bit of a shade of melody. The song progresses so slowly. It just seems like it takes hours for things to open and develop. But this is Pink Floyd, and this is where they're really beginning to find their sea legs, so to speak, no pun intended, with the ping sound. But this is pretty much like the basis for where the band would head throughout the rest of the 70s. So I hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll be back Friday as we continue our series Transistor Days. So hope you can join us then. On Americanet Radio, 90.3 WHPC, here are Pink Floyd then with Echoes. Thank you.
understand the best I can. No one calls us to move on, and no one forces down our eyes. No one speaks and no one tries, and no one flies around the sun. inciting me to write.